Appreciate you guys hanging out with us. It is indeed in the loop on the road at the Techstar Grill Shop, 25919 I-45 up Spring, technically, I guess.
Woodland Spring, okay. Somewhere in there. A little Magnolia and everything else that you want to. Say up here, Magnolia Spring, all that good stuff.
Yeah, hanging out with all the fine folks. We have people from all those various places who've come out and said what's up, gotten them some Nico's with the grill firing out front, and then come in. A lot of people getting some OG sauce.
Man, that's good news, isn't it?
For you.
And hey, we had a chef come in and said, man, I use that stuff.
Nobody's getting me OG sauce.
I got you.
Okay, all right. Just want to make sure. If you want to come in, get an opportunity to sign up to win a pair of tickets to the Titans game. Texas Ticket Tuesday. Tuesday is happening in person in the loop today. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us on a reaction Tuesday after a Monday night victory by your Texans 34-10. And in that game, let's discuss who hooped.
Some hoopers, man.
Let's have some appreciation for the people that played well in this football game, what that means. Lopez, and would you like to go first, or should I go first?
I got you.
Okay.
I got you.
You're going to take the low-hanging fruit?
And I want to go back to something I said earlier that I thought was very important, because it's kind of a moment of clarity, if you will. I think Henry To'oto'o and Jalen Petrie, I don't think you have to put a lot of qualifiers on it anymore. They're good. They have some warts, if you will, but, you know, like they like to say, the other guys get paid too. Petrie had a bad missed tackle early on, and I was like, oh no. But the dude just makes plays in every game. He's having a really good year.
Definitely a playmaker.
Obviously was a big part, the biggest part, arguably, of the game-changing play yesterday.
With the Derek Barnett strip sack that ultimately led to a big man touchdown, a thick six, as some people like to call it.
I like that. And Henry To'oto'o, it's like we keep looking for him to have a bad game, and he doesn't. You know? He's just consistent. He's not a superstar.
Don't speak for me. I haven't been looking for him to have a bad game. I've been in on his reading and reacting, his processing as a lot. All right, there we go.
How about that?
Texas chant going on. But Henry To'oto'o was like read and react as a linebacker has been very solid. And the one of the things that is unifying between those two players, but especially was visible for Jalen Petrie in that game, is the intensity that he brings, right? Like, one of the things is, as a head coach, D'Amico Ryans, maybe more than the average head coach in the National Football League, prides himself on, like, the culture building. It almost ends up being kind of more college-like in some ways. And that swarm mentality is embodied so strongly in Petrie, and it was very evident in that, in the way that he was coming up and making hits and applying that physicality to the point where the officials were like, we're throwing a flag on that because that looked like it hurt.
Yeah.
Right? Like, did he do something wrong? I'm not sure, but it looked like it hurt, looked like he launched, and so we're throwing a flag. Right? Like, that's the level of intensity and physicality
too.
Exactly, and that's what Jalen Petrie brings every time. Getting downhill, he has been a delight. I've said that very often, and I mean it.
I think what we're saying, we should probably realize now is, if we're going to say, hey man, they're going into week 12 and we're talking about the offense has still not snapped out of it completely,
correct,
we should say the same thing in a complimentary way about Petrie and To'oto'o. Hey, we're in week 12 and they're still playing. Yes, you know, Jalen Petrie, you know, you'd like to maybe have a guy that can be a little more solid in some coverages, but they're also covering up for that in a lot of ways. So Petrie and To'oto'o, let's give them credit, because we're in week 12 and they're still making plays.
Fair enough, but I thought you would take the low-hanging fruit here. His name is Joseph Tyler Mixon.
Tyler?
Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. I did. Oh, okay.
I like that.
That really seemed to touch you.
Tyler Mixon.
Okay. No, his name is Joe Mixon. And just to make the point, I said his full name. His full
government
which,
name.
Honestly, I just realized he might not take kindly to. Joe, please don't do nothing bad. But, like, yeah, Joe Mixon was clearly on another level. He does such a good job of creating a little something out of nothing when those instances do arise. I did feel like your run blocking was better than last week, which feels like it does not say a lot, but in the interest of being a little bit more positive in the way that I look at that, but it just becomes so much more impressive because he takes whatever is given to him and he makes more of it.
Yeah.
Right? And the vision the bounce that he seems to have was very evident in those first few drives with the Texans offensively, where he is just going and, okay, is that blocked up for two? Here's six. Yeah. Here's an explosive even. And then, of course, you get the 45-yard touchdown that also comes from his awareness, his ability to move on the field and see the spaces that are ahead of him. Like, he is the offense
when
it comes to the running game. And another 20 carries in this one, gets four targets out of the backfield, which feels like a slight uptick in the way that he is utilized. But it was just evident. Three touchdowns in this, and it wasn't one of those things where the stats kind of belie what happened on the field. No, that's exactly what happened. Joe Mixon was everywhere doing all the things that was necessary.
That's an obvious one. He is a bad, bad dude. I went a little bit more hipster with some of my hoops.
Yeah, I noticed, because I want to hit the ones that I feel like matter in a big way, because they also lean into something that I've been, one of the my general takeaways is like the pillars that this team is built around.
Right, and so I probably should have worn that beanie that you're wearing, except it's burnt orange.
This isn't burnt orange, is it?
It's burnt orange.
Okay.
Because I went a little more hipster.
I thought it was more of an amber.
And
you know what I mean?
I'll go with amber, because I don't want to put that jinx on
you. I don't even actually know what amber is.
Another hipster one for me, Frank Ross.
You want to see my sheet? Yeah. After Joe Mixon is Frank Ross.
That dude hooped. That is scouting. That is preparation.
Correct.
That is Frank Ross. And plus also just the way he react, like he knew he nailed it, you know, when they did the fake punt and they had John Metchie on there. They were doing tackling this week and being more physical, and they were showing John Metchie highlights of him being physical, and lo and behold, Frank Ross, one of the best in the business, if not, you know, maybe at the top. Absolutely hooped.
Yeah, one of the things you couldn't let the Cowboys do as clearly the lesser team in this was get extra possessions.
Mm-hmm.
And that fake punt was one of the ways that they were going to try and do it. Or like some level of special teams chicanery you knew was coming because Bones Fossil tends to do that.
Yeah.
And I say you knew, maybe we didn't, but Frank Ross clearly did and was entirely aware of it. And again, a little shout out to John Metchie here, right?
Yeah.
John Metchie not only laying the lumber as a wide receiver in that position, right? Like looks like a linebacker or a safety in that moment, but also on offense, when we talk about the guys getting open that had been a little bit of a concern for folks in weeks past, John Metchie is not one of those guys you're concerned with getting open. Like he got open decently in this game, understanding that Nico Collins is playing and he provides some help in that endeavor.
Yeah.
But Metchie was getting open. Metchie was making some plays with his feet, like with some yards after catch, which seems like it doesn't happen nearly enough with some of the
more
other
lately.
Wide receivers.
Yeah.
But yeah, John Metchie I thought was also someone that deserved a level of credit in his play. But also, we'll circle back around, and I don't want to forget, again, the pillars of this offense. And I think that it was also very evident in this game that this team depends so much on their pillars because of I was about to say something that was really mean, and I might say it anyways, but please understand, I didn't want it to sound so mean. The somewhat rot that's happening in other parts of the team.
Ooh, that's good.
Look, you know what I'm talking about. We don't have to get into that right this moment. But, yeah, man, the guys that are really holding this thing up outside because they're carrying right here, right on Sports Radio 610 live from the Techstar Grill Shop in the Woodlands, 25919 I-45. And, yeah, sometimes the internet gets you, man. Sometimes the internet monster gets you. I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there. I think that this was a cyber attack by Dallas Cowboys fans to not allow us to praise the good play of the Houston Texans in their
they're not smart enough
victory. Wow. Wow, that's crazy. So here we go. Let's continue to talk about who hooped in this game. And I think we were talking a little bit about did I mention Nico Collins?
You did early.
Okay, I mentioned Nico Collins. We mentioned Joe Mixon. We mentioned Frank Ross. Byron, did I mention Nico Collins?
No.
Okay, so let's talk about Nico Collins, because this one feels a little bit obvious, and I feel like it points in some ways to like what I was talking about earlier with B. Scott on how this team is kind of like built on pillars. And it kind of serves to cover for some of the, for lack of a better term, rot that's happening with some other parts of the team.
Yeah.
Right? Like some guys are having to pick up the slack. And Nico Collins is one of those because, clearly offensively, he produces, but it's more than the four catches of 54 yards that you got. Like, I think the box score doesn't tell you the whole thing, right, where you talk about all the screens becoming viable because you can get the ball to him in space. Clearly, you saw it right off the jump, getting the ball to him behind the line of scrimmage, letting him go. The size, the physicality that he brings as well. And then also, like, he's up there making the screens work, not just as the dude catching the football, but he also going and blocking for these guys and creating that in a way that it hasn't been viable, right? Like, between him and Joe Mixon, like, they create the big plays that are able to make this offense more viable. And without those two guys, like, you're clearly not seeing any of the efficacy that you see on the offense.
I don't think we've talked about this enough, and that is Nico Collins, not just screen plays, but just blocking in general on run plays for Mixon or whomever. I'm not trying to get into, like, intricacies of the game and, you know, film nerd and all that. But when you look at how they ran the ball when Nico was out, I mean, you're talking about Tank Dell and John Metchie giving it their all. And in fact, Metchie missed a big block yesterday on one of the runs that I recall. Like, they're giving their best effort. They can't do what Nico does. They don't have the body to do it.
Although, salute to Metchie. Metchie did, so obviously, making the big defensive play or the play on special teams, the big hit on the fake punt. Like, clearly creating more of the energy that the Texans obviously had a lot of juice in that building, in part because of the people, but in part because of some of the physical plays. But then also, like, he's been the dude who's been able to get some separation and create some space and get some yards up to catch. Like, he's also also a part of what's helping there.
But Nico helps every single aspect of this offense, and you just can't say enough about that. And you mentioned pillars. I can't go on without, and before we get to confessions, without talking about Derek Stingley.
Correct.
I mean, that dude is clearly top three or four cornerbacks in the NFL. I don't know who's going to argue that at this point, you know, with what the plays he's been making, the interceptions he doesn't get, but gets his hands on the ball. He had another one of those outside of his interception yesterday where he could have easily been one, but the offensive player turned into a defensive player, drawing offensive pass interferences, just being all over the field. I think his success rate was like 18%. Not just yesterday, like his success rate
over the course of the season.
Yeah, over the course of like 18%. I mean, he is a pillar. I mean, he might be one of the most important ones, certainly on the defensive side.
Yeah, five targets to his way in that game, only one of those completion. Like, he absolutely is one of those guys. But speaking of pillars, right, like Will Anderson Jr. clearly is a level of pillar. Guys that hooped, but with asterisks for me, Danielle Hunter and Derek Barnett, who like definitely applied pressure, but it came later in the game. And I think that highlighted for me just how much this defense is predicated on the pressure that they get up front. I think Troy Aikman even made note of it on the broadcast about how much this defense is, you know, for Nyamico Ryans is not necessarily like they don't do super exotic things, but what they do, you know, they just, you know, play style defense and then they rally to the football. But all of that is dependent on your offense or your defensive line rather getting pressure. It's literally the highest pressure getting defense in the league. And you had Cooper Rush back there looking downright comfortable for at least half
the
football.
That was problematic for me.
And some of it I understand was the way that they called the game. They really sat back in cover two and were just like, hey, are you going to be able to, you know, make the right decisions consistently and make long drives? All right, cool. But it feels like you still should be able to go and drive, and get after Cooper Rush in a way that you didn't. And it feels like that is in some ways indicative of the missing Will Anderson Jr. And there are stats that were, even before this game, pointed to the fact that, like, getting to the quarterback, when it comes to the actual sacking of the quarterback, they do at a significantly lower rate. Yeah. Pressures, they do at a lower rate when he's not there. And, of course, that in some ways is understood generally. Mm-hmm. Will Anderson Jr. is good at football, but the level of good that he is, especially
just disruptive
for the system that you need,
just being disruptive,
it matters a whole amount.
And an attention getter on both sides. Yeah. But, Derek Barnett, he does deserve an asterisk. Huge play that changed the game, but also a head slap that could have made it really, really
took points
dicey.
Off the board.
Took points off the board and should have been a touchdown, but the Cowboys are going to cowboy at some point. And by the way, when was the last time you saw a head slap? Deacon Jones?
No, not just saw one, but also saw one cold.
Yeah.
It was a weird thing that I did not anticipate in that game.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. So a little bit of hoo-hooped, interrupted so unkindly by a little bit of lost internet. But you know what? Since we got this internet, what we got to do is some lunchtime confessions.
Sometimes it's sports, sometimes it's not. Whatever it is, Reggie and John are keeping it real. It's In the Loop's Lunchtime Confessions, brought to you by Sagamore Spirit Rye Whiskey.
These are my confessions.
All right, so CJ Stroud, we think you were telling the truth. CJ, we think you were telling the truth. It's I don't know if it's a Freudian slip, but some kind of slip. So this was some of the funniest post game audio that the Texans have had all year. So he was asked about the offensive line, wasn't he, Byron?
Did amazing. They always do amazing. You know, I've been better with getting the ball out on time. You know, I believe that helps those guys out. You know, and Slow's done a good job of mixing it up. You know, got some more quick game in there. Got some times where, you know, we're helping their star rusher. Or, you know, I thought Titus played amazing. You know, Titus was in there battling. Him and Micah were going head-to-head pretty much the whole game. And, you know, Titus did amazing. And, you know, thought LT played well. You know, J-Pat, Juice, Shaq, you know, them boys, they're the heartbeat of our team. O-line and D-line are the reason why we win and lose. Excuse me, not why we lose. They're the reason why we win. Take that off the record.
Take that off the record.
They are the reason why we win. But it's up to us to play complimentary football. And, you know, a lot of times they get the blame, but it's not for them to blame. It's myself, you know.
Come on, CJ.
Yeah.
Come on, CJ. You can confess, too. CJ, you can confess, too.
That's good, Byron.
I confess that he was probably telling the truth there. CJ, you can do it. I mean, we all know. All right.
Yeah, I mean, not just that, right? Like, it feels like it's very obvious that you win and lose,
yeah,
depending on
so
that.
I'm saying, we all
based
know.
On, based on what they can do. And that just felt like I know I'm not supposed to say these things. And CJ is usually very good at saying the things that he's supposed to say,
yeah,
and not saying things that he's not supposed to say. But nah, you right in that instance. Like, ain't nobody going to be mad at you
no.
for getting that one off. But yeah, the D-line is the one where people, I think, might have been like, I don't know. But I'm coming around to the idea that, hey, man, if the D-line does not, like, if they aren't, like, super stout and really getting after the quarterback,
yeah,
it makes it a little bit tougher. Obviously, you win and you still got a 34-10 victory, but
right,
it does make it tougher. Man, I did not realize how much I missed watching a game at the house. It sounds silly, but for me, having the good fortune of working here at Sports Radio 610 with the home games, we're at NRG. We're watching that as kind of a Sports Radio 610 family up in the press box.
Yeah.
And, it's a good environment getting to talk with the guys and get a feel for what's happening in the press box. And then with the road games, one of the things that I have tried to do is I try and get in the studio and watch it with Sean and, you know, Seth and with Clint and get a feel for what's happening there with those guys as they're watching the game between the pre- and post-game show that they do. But this game, I actually, on a Monday Night Football, I was like, let me just watch it at home. And this is not, I'm not trying to brag, but just to give you a little context, I have a setup where I have three TVs. So I, you know, in the living room, have an opportunity to kind of watch different things. And oh my goodness, I miss being able to watch the game at home, because what I could do is I have one game live, I have another game slightly delayed. And I'm just constantly watching these plays over and over and over, and it gave me such a better understanding of what was happening in that moment before I go back and, like, obviously rewatch the game today and those types of things, get into some of the tape. I'm not going to pretend like I'm out here Clint Sternering it or anything, but man, I missed that. Plus, I actually had the Rockets game on. Now, was I paying attention to it? No, but I was able to kind of see some things as they happened. I missed just being in the comfort of the house.
It's two different kinds of good. Like, being at the stadium is just so special and cool, and, you know, from the parking lots to the stadium seats that I like to do, press box.
I did miss being out there in the tailgating.
But it's also really good at home. The 85-inch TV came through like a champ, brother.
I bet it did.
Oh, my goodness, that was good. So I think my granddaughter, my 2-year-old granddaughter, I think she needs a primer, and she'll learn it, but I think she needs a primer on when to say bless you. So she's learned how to say bless you, okay? And now she pretty much says it with any sound that someone makes, like any sound. If you sneeze, if you let me give you some examples. If you sneeze, she says, "Bless you."
That's right. She did it. Excellent.
If you cough, she says, "Bless you."
Okay.
If you clear your throat, as I did, she says, "Bless you." And the other day, I got up in the chair like the old man. I went, that old man grunting noise. She goes, "Bless you." I'm like, you don't have to say "bless you" for everything, but it is very, very cute.
I think she's onto something. Man. Like, I feel like we should be crossing up and saying "bless you" for all those things. The notion of "bless you" is like, hey, man, I know you're going through it right now, and I am here in support. And aren't you going through it when you have to, call for whatever? Definitely when you're grunting, getting up off the couch, you might fall over and hurt yourself.
I cleared my throat. Bless you. Yeah. I think she likes to say "bless you," but might need a little primer there. Or maybe not. Maybe you're right. Maybe you should just say "bless you" for all, everything.
It's not a bad way to go. I think that she's got something there. Watch this. These are my confessions. I thought to myself in this game, what is the worst big boy play?
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Guyton not following the football, or the Titus Howard from last week.
Oh.
And I've got to confess, it took a second. Now, of course, the answer is Titus Howard, right? Not only did you get beat, you were out there taking the ball from your quarterback. But I thought about it because Tyler Guyton in that moment, right, where Derek Barnett gets a lot of bend, beats that young man, hits Cooper Rush with the strip sack, and the ball is out. And Tyler Guyton, the left tackle at that point for the Cowboys, tries to pick it up. And don't we all know that you're supposed to fall on it?
Rumbling and stumbling.
Right, you're supposed to fall on it.
He absolutely should have fallen on it. But it led to one of the most fascinating quirks in football. I was going to say professional football. Why is it that they're all supreme athletes? Offensive linemen, defensive linemen. Why is it that offensive linemen seem to fumble in those situations more than defensive linemen?
I feel like defensive linemen are doing more straight away.
Do they work on it more? They're being more forward.
They're going more forward, so I feel like that gives you more opportunities. I don't know. I'm just saying stuff.
I thought he was going to fumble. Like when he got it, I was like, oh, this guy's going to
get... Yeah, because he was standing up.
this guy's going to get destroyed.
Now, if I go Texans-wise, worst offensive line performance... Last week, Titus on that particular play, or Laremy Tunsil on play number one, getting an illegal man downfield.
Have they lost? Laremy Tunsil would be.
Yeah, there are people talking about he should have walked home.
Yeah.
There are people talking about you need to fine him every time he gets any level of penalty.
Yeah.
The
answer is Titus Howard simply because of the outcome of the game. But the worst play, was Laremy Tunsil. It's just that they happened to
win. Because as Andre Ware said, you were working on it all week. You knew it was coming. It was part of the script.
You knew what was coming. And of course, obviously, Troy Aikman. Are you kidding me? That was pretty dang good. Watch this. These are my confessions. I just got to admit, I love how much Dalton Schultz hates his former team. Dalton Schultz hates the Cowboys. See his tweet this morning?
I didn't. I missed it.
Here, I'll show you right here. His tweet this morning. This was early. This was like, it might have been before even, right after they landed or whatever. Well, they landed earlier. But he has two mugs. And it's,
they're clear coffee glasses.
It's like cold brew. And one of them says, the Houston Texans are. And the other one says, look at his face. The other one says, Texas best team. And he pours it into both of them. The best team in Texas. And he grabs the best team in Texas and takes a big old... He hates the former, his former team. Remember, I was like, well, I wish we would have had this kind of offense, previously. And he was talking about Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gotten into it with the Cowboys, and now he's posting video. He doesn't do that.
No, he doesn't typically. I wonder how much the fervor that this team had was in part for Dalton Schultz, right?
He hates him.
Yeah, he does. I do wonder how much of that was translated, because I know one of the things that we were excited about was seeing the energy and effort that playing against the Cowboys seemed to brought out of this team. Not to say that they don't typically give energy and effort, but it felt like it meant something special in this instance. I do wonder how much of that is like standing up for your homeboy, Dalton Schultz. Although there are still people, again, like pointing to the 5-Hour Energy fan line that are like, hey, let's talk about Dalton, the tight end blocking or lack thereof from Dalton Schultz. There's still concerns, but at least for him, he's enjoying a win today. So salute to that man, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I loved it. Watch this. These are my confessions.
I apologize. I was unfamiliar with your game at Houston Texans. The social media manager for the Texans has been on a roll.
Oh, you saw the,
over the last day.
Did you talk about the roof tweet?
That is one of many. One of many after the Texans defeated the Dallas Cowboys. So we mentioned earlier how you had the two pieces of like sheet metal or what have you that fell from the roof, that dislodged from the roof, and ultimately caused what was supposed to be a roof open game to be a roof closed game, to the point where you remember Joe Buck at the start of the game said that the roof was open with a visual image of a closed roof. That was funny. Well, after the game, the Texans tweeted out, "Look out below," with a big old L and two sheet metal sheets in the form of an L.
Yeah.
That is only one of many.
Didn't they call them the Cowboys because they don't have a W?
Oh, that's tough.
I think that was the Texans called them the Cowboys.
There was that.
Because they didn't have the dub.
They put Post Malone, a noted Cowboys fan, in a Texans jersey. They said good night, sleep tight, H-Town, and then they put all sorts of stuff. They said that they did the Simpsons meme, say the line bar, weed them boys, with the Texas fans enjoying themselves. They put together one of those kind of like mashup TikTok videos. Man, they were going hard. And you know what? The Texas fans deserve it, because you have bragging rights for the next 2 years over them Cowboys fans that won't leave you.
I say again, this needs to happen. It is special, even though everybody picks up their game against Cowboys, and the Cowboys have their big, longtime rivalries. This is just different, man.
Yeah, I did not realize just how hard at Houston Texans on social media went, but I appreciate them for their efforts. And those are our Lunchtime Confessions here in the Loop on Sports Radio 610 as we continue to broadcast from the Texas Star Grill Shop in the Woodlands. You can get an extra 10% off any grill purchase during today's broadcast, and if you come out and say what's up to us, I guess you technically don't have to say what's up to us, but you do have an opportunity
to win
some Texans tickets to the Titans game in the bullpen. So you come and say what's up and then sign up for that. You don't have to be here to win, but you got to be here to sign up. Coming up next on the show, it is a Tuesday still, right?
A little CF Boat?
Let's do a little CF Boat. Talk about the college football games and weekend that was. We'll do that next. Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610, this time coming live from the Texas Star Grill Shop in the Woodlands. 25919 is the I-45
is
the address. As we're hanging out, a lot of fine folks have come by and said what's up, including a man named Reggie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was cool. It's always cool seeing somebody.
Another Reggie?
With a great name. You know, a great name. But, yeah, all sorts of people come in, say what's up, getting them some OG sauce, had some Nikos as well. And
registering for tickets.
That's exactly it. Texans Ticket Tuesday. Still over an hour to get in here and register for an opportunity to win a pair of tickets to the bullpen for the Titans game. Now, of course, the drive will also be given those away. They'll give those away, I believe, in the 5 o'clock hour, if I remember correctly. But if you want, if you're in the general area and you want to come out to the Tech Star Grill Shop, you have another chance to win that way as well. But it's a Tuesday.
Yes, it is.
It is a Texans reaction Tuesday, and I guess some folks on the text line getting involved, the 5-Hour Energy fan line, mind you. Someone said, 713, don't the Cowboys and the Texans play next year too? No, the NFC East and the AFC South face off in 2026, so those bragging rights will last just a little bit longer. You got 2 years. You got that renewed for 2 years, and then hopefully you'll get to renew them in that time as well. But let's get a little bit of CF Boat. College football on a Tuesday.
I got some things I want to bounce off you guys here.
Okay, very good.
Because I love talking some college football on a Tuesday. I love it mostly because I like saying CF Boat.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that.
It was a staying alive Saturday, you said?
Yeah, it was a staying alive Saturday, and some certainly did. Here's where I'm going with this after watching all this. Texas did stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
Looked, mostly good, but not great. And this is where I'm heading with it, not just Texas. I think all four of the top college football teams look a little vulnerable.
Oregon,
or maybe
Ohio. I mean, Oregon went down to the wire with Wisconsin, and Wisconsin fires Phil Longo, their offensive coordinator, literally the next day, or 2 days later.
Yeah, so Oregon, Texas.
No, next day. I was right.
Ohio State and Penn State. I'm not saying, I mean, any four of them could easily win the national championship. What I'm saying is there's some vulnerabilities at the top of this. More, who would have thought? Who would have thought that this would happen, you know, where you go to a 12-team playoff and you need a 12-team playoff?
Yeah. That,
you know?
I mean, the College Football Playoff Committee, I don't know if they're better about it or, you know, if it makes them look better, but that there's not an elite college football team this year. You look at SP Plus, and of course, you know, I was going to bring up an advanced stat. Come on now. SP Plus kind of puts Ohio State as the best team in the nation.
I wouldn't argue too much.
A little bit of gap, and just there's a whole bunch of teams that I don't know that you feel that Ohio State is anywhere near infallible. I bet Figgy would agree with that sentiment. But yeah, it just feels like there's a whole bunch of teams. There's a glut of teams up there that they'll get an opportunity to play. And one of the things that's interesting about it as well for me is there's a glut of teams that you look at and you go, man, they haven't played a ton of great teams.
Yeah.
And I think some of that is the problem of these, you know, this conference realignment where these big conferences where you can miss a lot of the good teams in the conference because there's so many teams in there.
Yeah. Like, you know, Texas has played some great brands. You know, they've played Oklahoma, but they're not that good. You know,
not this season.
You know, the branding is there, but not the talent of the team. And here's the second part I want to bring up for you. Like, we talk about a 12-team playoff, and, that'll solve a lot of the ills, you know, with college football and the national championship. It's difficult. Like, even to get to 12, you know, you would think, well, four, yes, that's going to be hard to get to four. There's always going to be someone with a valid argument. But let's look at the SEC. Ole Miss might be playing the best football in the SEC right now.
Possibly.
And they got two losses. South Carolina is not far behind, and they're still in the hunt in the SEC, and they've got three losses. And then, I think South Carolina might have two. But in either way, they both are multiple losses.
South Carolina has three losses.
They do have three losses.
Yes, sir.
And then you've got A&M, Tennessee, Alabama, all with two losses that are wild cards that if they win out could easily be there as well. The SEC is deep, deep, deep. And that's not even to mention Georgia, you know, and some of these others that are up there. Like the SEC could have four?
I don't, but
three?
Yeah, and there's going to be that continued deference to the SEC and the Big Ten, as evidenced early on by these rankings that the committee is putting out. I wonder how everybody's going to get along with that, considering that the whole idea of this was to open this thing up a little bit more, at least in theory.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, we'll see what the College Football Playoff ultimately delivers, and we'll see what the committee gives us in rankings that actually don't matter, but give us a little bit of insight into the way that they go about this. As tonight is the night.
Tonight is the night.
They give us the next iteration of those rankings. Some notes from the weekend in college football. Our Army-Navy conference championship dream is dead. Tulane put the hurt to Navy, 35-0. And so Tulane has punched their ticket to the AAC conference championship, the American conference. So unfortunately, you won't get that. But we'll still get Army-Navy this year, obviously, as you always do. And Army, they unveiled their jerseys for that game.
Pretty sweet.
They look dope. Like, they're all black, but they have kind of like these white,
like silhouette
snow
almost
accents.
Yeah, yeah.
In honor of the Battle of the Bulge, which is what they are honoring, the 125th iteration of this. That game should still be fun because both those teams are fun football teams.
One of the best games you'll ever go to, just flat out.
The pomp and circumstance
just
of it.
Just everything. You know, you don't even have to stay for the game. But everything else is just awesome. And the intensity and the atmosphere, everything.
Can we talk about Brian Kelly and how ugly it is at LSU?
I have him in my notes as well.
As the Florida Gators. Yes, those Florida Gators that it looked like Billy Napier was going to be fired into the sun from. Mm-hmm. They get a victory 27-16. This was something I found interesting in the course of this game. LSU had allowed all of six sacks all season leading into that game. Florida sacked them seven times.
Yes, they did.
If you like Florida with Billy Napier, you thought that was a team where, oh man, that guy is losing the rope. Mm-hmm. They might be playing for him. On that field, there was one team where it looked like their players weren't playing for the coach, and it was the team. It was LSU.
He yelled at one guy, got yelled back by another guy.
Correct.
Right? And that was my take on Brian Kelly. If you're going to be an a-hole, if you're going to lose at LSU, don't be an a-hole. Brian Kelly is just a couple more disappointing losses away from legitimately being maybe on the way out.
Well, the problem is he's got a really long contract.
He's got a long contract.
And so there's a lot of money that you'd have to – and I think that this might be the last year of them still paying Ed Orgeron. I don't know that they're going to pass the hat around for all that. However, reporting still indicates that Brian Kelly probably still would have been fired if not for the five-star quarterback recruit Bryce Underwood
that they have.
I know that there's been – like Michigan has been trying to steal the recruit, and it feels like he has put up things that have basically said, hey, more money and maybe,
I might listen.
That happens. But, yeah, man, the Brian Kelly thing is in a really bad place, especially if you can – I don't know whether the rumor is true or not, but if you can reasonably hear a rumor that if it wasn't for this particular recruit that he had, then he would lose his job with like 8 years left on a deal, that is real disconcerting, and it's all because Brian Kelly just isn't like – he's not likable.
He's an a-hole.
And you don't – like, you get no benefit of the doubt if you're not likable.
Right.
That's exactly where he is.
Speaking of which, has anyone ever had a more meteoric rise and fall?
Is this Mensa Man?
Than Tom Herman.
Mensa Man, as I like to call him.
Like, I'm talking about, like, there have been some more, you know, incredible rises and incredible falls that had this to do with something off the field. I'm talking about just on the field. On the field. This dude was the second coming, and now he might not get another head coaching job for a long time. He got fired from
Florida Atlantic. Yeah, they fired him after his fifth straight loss. He was the team was 2-8 this season. He 6-16 in his first couple of years.
Yeah.
Not even full second year, but his first year plus with the team. And this represents a fairly meteoric downfall for him.
Yeah.
We saw him with USF a couple weeks back, or maybe last week, when they lost, trying to get his satisfaction with the USF head coach would not give him that. Like, Tom Herman, I think that's another instance of, like,
A-hole.
Not likable.
Yeah.
But what's tough about it is it seemed like the way that he operated at the University of Houston, not on the way out, because clearly that was trash. But, like, the way that he was able to engender support, the way that he got buy-in, the way that he built, the esteem around the program, you would imagine that that would translate somewhere else, even if it doesn't work at Texas, which is just a different environment. Like, you would think that, like, a FAU would be a place that maybe you could make something shake. Hell, didn't Lane Kiffin make something shake over there?
Yeah.
And no, he's not. And I do wonder if just, like, is the illusion broken after people learned more about his get down all the way around, and this just doesn't work in the new era or in any era of college football?
Once they got to know him, they realized what he was, and they were out. He goes in 2015, they went 13-1, won the Peach Bowl, beat Florida State. I believe, did they have Dalvin Cook then? But they really stud running. I mean, they in the Peach Bowl. Then goes to Texas, goes 10-4, goes to the Sugar Bowl. And, you know, that was the Georgia team that rested a lot of guys, but the Texas Longhorns beat them. And then he goes 8-5, 7-3, fired. Now FAU, 4-8, 2-8, fired. Hated at Houston when he left. Hated at Texas when he left.
Correct.
Hated at Florida Atlantic when he left. If you're going to lose, just like Brian Kelly, at least try not to be an a-hole.
Well, Brian, I don't even know how much Brian Kelly, like, Tom Herman, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's more of the word that you keep using that makes me a little uncomfortable. But Brian Kelly, you know that person that you're just like, I just don't like his face. Like, he's a nice enough guy. I just don't like him. Like, there's something about him, and that is Brian Kelly specifically. One more thing for me, note-wise. Pitt-Clemson was one of the interesting games, especially in the ACC. Like, that was one of the ones that we were looking at as, hey, the good teams in the ACC meeting up.
Staying alive.
And, man, it felt like Pitt was doing such a great job. Like, they had only allowed Clemson to rush for all of, get this, 8 yards for a majority of this game until late in the game, where Cade Klubnik breaks off a 50-yard scramble for a touchdown that ultimately proved to be the game-winning touchdown, 24-20 over Pitt. And you had to feel bad about them at Acrisure Stadium, at their home stadium, having played really good football, particularly defensive football, the type of football that
Cade Klubnik
breaks free and shows you the wheels and sends you off with a loss.
Two more quick thoughts here for CF Boat. The Heisman Trophy is Travis Hunter. punters to lose, correct?
Ah, that feels like it's the case, especially if you listen to Dion, and if you have any level of, you know, any
and
level
of Shadur finished second if you're listening to Dion.
Yeah, well Dion basically went to the place where, you know, they asked him the question of, is basically to have the campaign, which is sort of a weird question, or thing that we do with college coaches. Hey, campaign for your player.
Yeah.
And he basically denied to do that, then saying that if you don't see that, then it's because of, like, the beef that you have with me, which, Dion, which good luck.
He feeds on that stuff, though.
He sure does. But you might be right. Like, he's the odds-on favorite, and he continued to play at an incredibly high level on both sides of the football, offense and
struck
defense.
Struck the pose this week?
He did. But what's funny is Ashton Gentry did that as well. Another 159 yards. He's now well off of the pace of the Barry Sanders record, but it's still crazy what he's doing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think we cannot get past just how incredible what it is that Travis Hunter is doing on both sides of the football, playing like a first-round pick, which a lot of people have bandied around the question, does he play offense or defense when he gets to the league?
Yeah, I mean, he'd probably have a taste of both, but I would guess more defense.
Yeah, I'm guessing that you can play him. You can kind of do the Deion Sanders thing where he's constantly a cornerback, and then
comes
he gets
in
certain packages as a wide receiver to get the best of both worlds.
And last thing, and we're going to dig into this more on Friday when we talk some more college football in depth, but a lot of people talk about the game of the century this, the game of the century that. Indiana has its game of the century this week.
With Ohio State.
With Ohio State.
Supposedly one of the best teams in the nation. We'll see ultimately where that ranking lines up, but that's not going to matter all that much. That game will
tell us a lot.
Got to
beat Ohio State. They've never played a bigger game in their existence.
They haven't. I mean, they haven't had this many wins in their existence, they haven't had the position or the platform for this. What has become our show's Indiana Hoosiers, funny enough?
Yeah, I love them.
Figgy probably wouldn't agree
this
with
year,
that.
But this year I do.
But Figgy ain't here today, so ain't no problem with that. I hope
Somebody's
Figgy's feeling
fire inside this place.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, we need to go figure out what is happening with that roaring fire inside this Texas Star Grill shop in the Woodlands. While we figure that out, on the other side, we will come back. Do we need to talk about the questions about CJ, because it feels like they're more valid after the Texans' 34-10 victory over the Cowboys. We'll talk about that next.